Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
This is Lisa Cohn. Today I'm here with my brother, mental game coach Patrick Cohn, and Lauren Seagrave. He's founder of Velocity Sports Performance, which provides training for athletes of all abilities and levels. Lauren has coached Olympic, professional, and college athletes to improve their speed, agility, quickness, and strength. We're going to talk a little bit about the issues that undermine confidence.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Hi, Lauren. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. Good morning.
Can you tell me a little bit about the issues that you see in your athletes in terms of what undermines their confidence?
Well, I think that it's the doubt that not only is put in their minds by themselves, which certainly would be enough in its own right, but more importantly, the doubt that's put in their minds by other individuals that are not only, you know, significant to them, like parents and siblings and peers, but also coaches who you would think would want to buoy the athlete's confidence up rather than subtly undermine it and tear it down.
Well, let's start with parents, since we have a lot of parents listening. Tell me a little bit about how parents undermine confidence.
Well, the one reason or one way that parents undermine confidence is they look back at their own careers or lack of careers and sometimes extrapolate that to their children. It's quite frequent that we might have a dad come into Velocity Sports Performance and say, you know, golly, I wasn't very fast and couldn't jump very good and was always the last person picked on my block. And, you know, my son is just like me. I mean, you can't do anything to help him at his speed, can you? What do you think about that, son? And so it's a real subtle subtle undermining, extrapolating their past experiences, or, you know, maybe even perceived as failures, to their abilities of their children. And children really are a blank slate. And genetics has a lot less to do with a person's performance than once was thought.
That's interesting. Now, what do you do in that case? What do you tell the dad and what do you tell the kid?
Well, we sit down and we talk about the 10,000 hours that it takes to develop expert performance and how you are a result of your training and the type of training that you do. And just because dad maybe wasn't all that great an athlete or didn't feel like a good athlete, it may have been because of his experiences and training. When we emerge from the womb, we're all pretty much fast twitch athletes. But it's the activities that we do going forward that change the dynamics of not only the muscles but the nervous system. And so doing the right things at the right developmental times, and for girls, this critical period is 7 to 11, for boys 8 to 12, can powerfully impact their ability to enjoy the sports experience and really, really get the most out of the sports opportunity.
Now, when you say doing the right things, doesn't that mean learning the sport in a way that helps them succeed and build their confidence?
Learning the sport is certainly one thing in terms of strategies and tactics and sport-specific skills, but being able to develop the strength, the power, the speed, the agility, and the quickness is another aspect that has long been thought to be, you know, pretty much determined by mom and dad, whereas we know today that it's the activities, the right types of activities given and taught. We believe that speed is a skill.
One of the areas that baffles me is when an athlete has a tremendous amount of success in their training and also in their competition, but yet lacks that full confidence in their ability. Do you see those type of athletes? And then what do you think it is that despite having success, they don't have full confidence?
Well, that's a tremendous point, because it does happen at all levels. One of the athletes that I was working with in 1993, a 100-meter runner that was one of the fastest in the world at the time, And as a matter of fact, at the national championships in the very first round, ran 9.79 seconds with a little bit too much wind, second fastest time ever. And the press just went crazy and interviews, and I finally got him into the car, and he looked at me and he said, "Do you think I can do that again?"
Wow. Did you understand?
Well, I said, "Well, did you try to do it the first time?" He said, "No, it just happened. It was easy. The performance was easy." Well, interestingly, later that day, he did it again. 9.79 seconds in the 100 meters in the semifinals. And the place erupted and interviews, and he got him back into the car so I could get him dinner. And he said, "Do you think I can do that tomorrow?"
But isn't that what drove him to try harder and harder?
Well, it's not necessarily trying harder and harder. It's allowing your performance to be expressed, and not necessarily forcing the performance. Sometimes sometimes it's the ability to relax and let things happen that you've prepared over time, whether it's you know whether it's weeks, whether it's months, or whether it's years, to allow that performance to be expressed rather than getting in your own way.
We talk about that issue in our workbook, Patrick, but we use
absolutely
different terms.
Absolutely. I mean, a critical point Lauren is making is the ability to train hard, believe in what you train, have confidence in what you train, but be able to take it to competition, because there's a difference in my book between practice self-confidence and competitive self-confidence. So it's the athlete that's able to go out and, as Lauren says, express themselves in competition, trust what they've done in their training, and let it happen and not try hard and get in their own way.
Right. That's what I was referring to in our workbook. We make that distinction between those two issues.
And this is where the coach can be critical in terms of bridging training confidence and competition competence, and being able to continually monitor and periodically measure performance and show athletes then, because of the database that the coach has assimilated, or rather accumulated, they can then demonstrate to the athlete their ability without having actually had the athlete perform at that level. It's building belief in the athlete, having the athlete build the belief in their performance level. Here's an example. We had a tremendous athlete that I coached at Louisiana State University, and she ended up going from 12-2 in the 100 meters, which is a pretty good time for a high school athlete, to 5 years later running 10.83 and becoming the fourth fastest woman in the history of the world. What a powerful tool having her developmental data in the standing long jump, in the vertical jump, in the shot put throw, to be able to talk to a freshman and to say, you know, your marks as a freshman are better than Sheila's were when she was a freshman. Look and see what she did in terms of applying your ability and your dedication and to training and moving forward. But golly, you could be pretty good.
Wow. You know, Lauren, I think you said earlier that you, and I may have misheard you, that you build data to build their confidence. Is that what you said? I'm trying to understand a little bit better about what you said.
Absolutely. In terms of measurables, you want to be able to measure milestones in an athlete's performance. And this is done over the course of a training year, but over the course of an athlete's career, so that you can see progress, so that the athlete can see progress and feel accomplishment, but so also you can monitor their training and know what to do next, what works, what's maybe not working, when should we change. And to be able to have the athlete participate in that process so that they develop an understanding of why they're doing what they're doing allows them to be a lot more confident in the execution. I'm volunteering at my local high school right now.
Mm-hmm.
And before training and during training and after training, we'll sit down and talk about, well, why are we doing this particular exercise and how is it going to help you develop? And there's been several athletes already that says, it gives me a lot more confidence when I know that at least you seem to know what you're doing.
Oh. so
rather than,
your history,
you know,
and data.
Any coach can make you tired.
Right.
And they often do, but not every coach can teach you how to be faster. But if they see that there is a system and a rationale behind it, they buy into it a lot more and have a lot more confidence in the training program, therefore extrapolate that confidence to their ability to perform.
Right. And I must say, Lauren, you sound like you know what you're talking about, and I'm sure that helps too. Now, you also mentioned that coaches and peers can undermine confidence. Can you talk a little bit about some of those issues?
Coaches have to be extremely, extremely careful of the things they say. Just a simple offhand comment, maybe trying to be a little bit, you know, joking, can really undermine an athlete's confidence. The flippant comment about an athlete's weight, for example, or even what they've chose to wear that day, can subtly start to undermine their confidence. Athlete comes up to the coach and says, "Coach, I want to learn how to pole vault." And the coach says, "No, you can't pole vault. I mean, you don't have the upper body strength to pole vault. When you learn to stand on your hands and do a handstand push-up, then we'll let you pole vault." Rather than saying, "Well, gosh, that's fantastic that you've got an interest in pole vaulting. Let's see if we can talk to the pole vault coach and find a time where you might be able to work with them and see if your abilities lend itself to achieving a new event." It's a subtle thing. And peers, teammates, and you would think, but teammates and competitors are often people that will actually undermine your performance. You have to watch who's minding your mind. If you're not minding your own mind, then someone else can get in and start to gradually undermine your confidence.
And the peers would do it by just making offhand comments
saying, "Oh, golly, are you feeling okay? You don't look very good." Runners
or commenting about their weight.
Runners to your mark, set. And the athlete's going, "Oh, gosh, maybe I don't feel, bang, very good."
And what do you tell kids in this instance when they've got coaches and friends and parents who are undermining their confidence?
Well, this is again where the coach can help the parent, help the athlete, and that identifying what is the dream for the athlete and what is the reason why the athlete wants to be out there. And we're talking about 7-year-olds all the way up to some of the best people on the planet, and that the dream or the reason, if you don't like the word dream, is tremendously, tremendously important, and be able to cultivate that dream and build that dream so that the athlete can not only see the dream and articulate the dream, but can taste the dream and smell the dream and build the dream into a potential reality, an ideal that they're moving toward, and then the coach then, through various means, one of the means that we talked about was performance measurement and comparison, is to build that athlete's belief in their dream, and this is one of the things that creates longevity in terms of participation in sport. We're seeing tremendous dropout rates in the middle school years.
Right.
But how can some athletes continue to compete until they're 40 years old? Well, their dreams are bigger than their accomplishments. They still have things to look forward to.
Well, and they still enjoy it, too.
Pardon?
Isn't it also about enjoying sports?
It is, but enjoyment often comes from, you know, accomplishment and achievement and excelling and discovery. And if you always have something out there that you're moving to, you have the possibility to continue to build and enjoy and develop.
And that's Patrick,
fun.
Don't you find that sometimes the parent's dream for the kid is not the same as the kid's dream? I'll ask both of you this.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the parents sometimes, we've talked about how they can, you know, vicariously live through their child and their dream for their child is a little bit different, especially with the very young athletes. You know, my daughter, who's 8 years old, you know, in her case, for example, she just wants to go out and play games and have fun with her friends. And, you know, when I ask her if she's interested in playing tournaments at some level, she's, "No, don't pressure me. I don't want to play tournaments. I just want to have fun with my friends and play games." That's the stage that she's at right now. So there's
Absolutely.
Often a disconnect between what the parent wants for the child and, you know, actually what the child's agenda is.
So true. The dream of the child has to be congruent with the dream of the parent and the dream of the coach. I have a 4-year-old son, Loren. And I played ice hockey at the University of Wisconsin, and the first time we went skating, he did okay and, you know, fell down a couple times. And, you know, after the skating experience on the way home, I said, Loren, what did you like best about skating? He said, Daddy, I like the hot chocolate.
Well, that's
not necessarily
typical.
The answer I might have expected, but that's where he is at in terms of his sports development.
And, of course, you just support that. You give him lots of hot chocolate, right?
He knows that when we go skating, he gets hot chocolate. So there's a – and he enjoys that experience, and it may be a means to an end for him right now, and he may never, ever become an ice hockey player.
And you're okay with that?
I'm okay with that. Now he's gonna do. He likes to do physical things, and he played soccer this year, and he didn't. He was trying to figure that out, but now he dribbles the ball around the house, and he has to go play, and you know, teach me how to hit the ball with my head. And he's 4 and a half,
uh-huh.
So it's relatively unsolicited. My wife was an Olympian in track and field, and you know, we kind of joke that, you know, we have to force ourselves to watch TV so that they can be exposed to sports because we're not real big fans necessarily.
That's interesting. Well, I have one last question for you. How do your top level athletes develop confidence? Do they have, is there something special that they bring to the table in the confidence arena?
I think that, again, it goes back to these fundamental things. One of the things that I've always felt is that confidence is always preceded by competence. And so when an athlete or when anyone in any endeavor feels that their competence has increased, they become much more confident.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the things that you see in athletes is that, you know, I've consulted with professional teams, I've worked on the staff of professional teams, and you see that athletes, they want to go through these drills. We're preparing several potential NFL athletes for the combine and their pro days and that type of thing, and what they want to know is, did I do it right? Did I look good? Can I see the video? Can I see the video of somebody doing it well and compare myself so I can build my confidence by knowing that I can execute properly and I'm not going to be made a fool of? Whereas in the track team that I'm working with right now, we have our first meet this weekend, and we haven't been able to do the number of training sessions because of the weather on the relay exchanges and even getting in the starting blocks. And when you kind of don't know how to get in the starting blocks and everybody else does, you think, gosh, I'm not very good. You know, everybody else knows how and I don't know how, and how can I possibly run against them? And the self-talk starts to undermine the athlete's confidence.
Right.
High-level athletes have positive self-talk. They mind their minds and don't let other people come in and steal their dreams. But it's that positive, thinking always the positive rather than letting any negative come in.
Right. We talk about positive self-talk in our workbook. Don't you find, though, as a coach, I find that the kids at the age of 5 or 7 who come in with confidence are the ones who are confident in other aspects of their lives.
That is very true, and that's the single biggest thing that we hear from especially moms about their daughters. They'll say, we don't need a stopwatch to see that Abby has gotten faster. I mean, she scored more goals, and the coach says she's unbeatable on defense. But the single biggest thing we recognize is she's so much more confident on the field. But we hear the same thing at PTA from her classroom teachers, and we see it when she interacts with her peers and her siblings. Again, that confidence is always preceded by competence. As the athlete believes they can because they've demonstrated it to themselves, their confidence does improve.
That's great. Well, Loren, I really appreciate you coming on our show. You've been great, and we'd love to have you back.
Any time. I really enjoyed it, and all the best.
All right. Thank you, and thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Be sure to visit youthsportspsychology.com to get our new workbook CD program, The Ultimate Sports Parent. You can also pick up our free ebook, 10 Tips to Improve Confidence and Success in Young Athletes. That's youthsportspsychology.com.